Our second class is entitled Judges. The day's theme is Samson, and our speaker is our brother Stephen Robinson. Brother Stephen.
Well, good morning. So just a reminder, this week we're looking at the judges, and particularly the four judges that are found in Hebrews chapter 11. And we're asking the question is, why would they be selected to be put into Hebrews 11, the chapter of the faithful? And we've come to Samson. And when you look at the life of Samson, you have to ask the question, why would anyone choose Samson to be in Hebrews 11? So, I mean, if you read through this story, it's a great guy. He marries outside the truth, or at least he tries to. He sleeps with a prostitute. He lives with another woman who certainly doesn't seem to be his wife. He's supposed to be a Nazirite, but it doesn't sound like he lives like a Nazirite. He has been given tremendous opportunity, huge strength. But how does he use it? It seems like he squanders his opportunities. So how does this not disqualify him for being picked for Hebrews chapter 11? Why would anyone pick him for this chapter? And I think with the life of Samson, you have to sort of step back and say, okay, obviously he must have been picked for some reason. And maybe because of that, we should take a closer look at his life. And there's another piece of information as you read through this story. You find out that he judged Israel for 20 years. And I don't know about you, but when I read through the story, it doesn't sound to me like a 20-year time period. And it's a story that goes from his birth all the way to his death. So obviously in the life of Samson, we have been given a selective account of the events that occurred. And God selected these events for a reason. So this morning, as we look at his life, we'll try to answer the question of why he was picked to be placed in Hebrews 11, but also look at how God was working in the life of Samson. So how do we understand Samson? What was he like? And his name means sunshine, means brilliant light. And I don't know about you, but being at Manitoulin, sometimes you appreciate this a little bit more than in other places when you have beautiful sunshine like we had yesterday. This was the type of person Samson was. Some people are like this. They walk into a room and you hear them and you know that they're there. Some people you might be able to walk into a room and they're just in the corner and they're quiet and you can easily miss them. That was not Samson. Samson was loud. He was like sunshine. The room lit up when he walked in. And people noticed him. Because, well, where Samson was, amazing things happen, and that sometimes gets you a little bit more attention. Samson was the type of person who really liked jokes and riddles and plays on words. And as we read through his story, and you'll find little examples of this, of wordplay, of jokes and riddles. He liked that kind of thing. It was fun. He was playful. You know, my favorite of these is actually in Judges chapter 16, where he picks up the gate of Gaza and he marches it in the middle of the night all the way to Hebron. And why did he do that? Why did he bother? Why didn't he just pick up the gates, walk out, and throw them away? Well, the reason is because Hebron was Abraham's city. Well, why would he take the gates of Hebron to Abraham's city? Well, because in Genesis chapter 22 and verse 17, we're told that Abraham was promised that thy seed shall inherit the gates of your enemies. And Samson thought, let's make that happen. So he did. That's what Samson was like. It seems like he was a person who made friends easily. And too easily at times. And with people that maybe he shouldn't have been friends with. And he was passionate about the things that he did, for good and for bad. And he trusted people more so than was appropriate. And at the beginning of the life of Samson, in Judges chapter 13, we have a verse, so at the end of Judges chapter 13, we have a verse that really describes the entirety of his life. And that's in verse 25. And it says there, "And the Spirit of the Lord began to move him at times in the camp of Dan between Zorah and Eshtaol. And Zorah means a hornet, and Eshtaol means to be entreated, and that was Samson's life. He either was acting like a hornet and stinging the Philistines, or he was being entreated by the Philistines. And I think sometimes, unfortunately, we can relate to him and sympathize with him. And notice also it says, in the camp of Dan. Why was Dan living in a camp? Why were they living an unsettled existence? They're in the promised land. They should have houses and fields and vineyards. And I don't know about you, but you know, when you come to Manitoulin, it's kind of neat to live in a camp for a week or so and experience what that's like. But I really enjoy it when I get home in my own bed with a proper roof over my head. And you appreciate all of that, that being just in a solid structure. You don't have to worry about when it's pouring rain, whether it's going to leak. And Dan was still living in a camp. Why? Why were they like that? Why hadn't they taken their inheritance and established themselves? Well, obviously they hadn't had the courage or the strength or the faith to do that. And I think Samson was frustrated with his tribe and with his ecclesia. Frustrated that nobody seemed interested in about settling in. Frustrated that people were content to live like this. Frustrated that they were acting like they were still wandering in the wilderness. Frustrated that God's people were accepting that the Philistines had the rule over them. And so, in this class, what I'd like to do is walk through three incidents from the life of Samson that I think show us how God was working with him to develop his faith. And the first incident comes in Judges chapter 14. And we have in Judges chapter 14, at the very beginning, it says, Samson went down to Timnath. Why did he go there? Well, if you go over to Joshua chapter 19, you find out that this area was actually supposed to be the land of Dan. This was the inheritance of Dan. You see Zorah and Eshtaol mentioned here, also Timnah mentioned here. This is the same place. This was their inheritance, and Samson is going down to check out a city that should have been Dan's. And he goes down there, and he looks at this city, and you know what happens? He realizes, wow, the people living here are Philistines, and they have daughters. And the Philistine girls are gorgeous. And I think he went down with good intentions, but he became incredibly distracted. You know, I guess sometimes I can sympathize with Samson. It's easy to sometimes be really motivated for the truth and the things of the truth, but you know, sometimes you get distracted by other things that are going on. It might be the World Series, and suddenly that seems to occupy my attention. This is what happened to Samson. He went down there, and he was distracted by them, and he was enticed by them, and I think he forgot about what his original goal was when he went down there. We're told in verse 4, something I think is interesting that I think we have to be careful about. It says in verse 4, his father and mother knew not that it was of the Lord that he sought an occasion against the Philistines, for at that time the Philistines had dominion over Israel. And you might read this verse as saying, no, Samson went down to Timnath to fall in love with a Philistine girl so that he would have an opportunity to have a bit more contact with them and destroy them. I think you need to read this verse that God, yes, God wanted him to have contact with the Philistines to destroy them. He didn't want him to fall in love with the Philistines. That's where Samson took it a little bit too far. God doesn't work that way. But God can work through our weaknesses. And God can use our failings to help us to learn a lesson and to move us forward in the truth. And in this situation, I think God actually bails Samson out. And he works the incident to show Samson what these Philistines are really like. And that he really shouldn't be entangled with them. That he really can't trust them. And Samson had a problem with his eyes here. And this is the first incident where we see that. There will be two others. And in the first two, God actually, it seems, bails him out. Provides him with his spirit and his power. And Samson overcomes the situation and makes it through. In the third incident, that won't be the case. God stops bailing him out. And all of us have strengths and weaknesses. All of us have problems in our life that we're dealing with. And all of us at times are being given opportunity to work on those weaknesses. And God is patient with us. But sometimes God says enough is enough and he stops bailing us out. And we'll see that later on. And we can look down at Samson for his weaknesses and his failures, but I think what we need to do is realize that this is a lesson for us, and so that to look at our own lives and find those areas that we need to work on, find those areas that we need to cut out of our lives. And there's a warning here for us that if we don't, that God will step in. So I want to look at this situation, look at how God was working with Samson here. And we have this in this incident with this young lion. In Judges chapter 14, in verse 5. And we're told there that Samson went down, and his father and his mother, to Timnath, and came to the vineyards of Timnath, and behold, a young lion roared against him. So he's going down there, and he's probably admiring, wow, the Philistines here really know how to live. Dan's a camp. Dan's a bit of a mess. And here these Philistines have these beautiful vineyards that I can walk through. They have nice settled houses. Their girls were gorgeous. What a wonderful people to be with. Why in the world would I want to stay in Dan? And he meets a lion as he's walking through the vineyard. And what does this vineyard represent? Well, if you look in the Bible, the vineyards represent the good things in life. They're the symbol of an inheritance. This was the promised land. God was giving them this promised land as an inheritance. This vineyard should have been their vineyard, but it wasn't. It was the Philistines. You know, it talks about in the kingdom age, how that people will build houses and inhabit them. They shall plant vineyards and eat the fruit of them. If you look in Deuteronomy chapter 6, God had promised to Israel houses and fields and vineyards. This was part of the land that was promised to them. But there was a problem. There was a lion in their vineyard. Who is this lion? And this lion is the Philistines occupying Israel's vineyard. And this lion jumps at Samson, roars at him. And Samson grabs the lion and destroys the lion. I think that this line here represents the Philistines and is pointing out to Samson what he should be doing. The Spirit of God comes upon him and he needs to remove the Philistines from the land of Israel. Now, I think Samson thought about this incident. We know it played on his mind. He thought about this line. He thought of how the Spirit of God had come upon him and how he had destroyed the lion. We know that because he comes back to the lion to take another look. He was puzzled by the lion because it looked so different now after he had destroyed it. The lion was lying there and was dead. And he came back to take a look at it. And we read about this in Judges 14 and in verse 8. And it says, after a time, he returned to take her, and he turned aside to see the carcass of the lion. And behold, there was a swarm of bees and honey in the carcass of the lion. And he took thereof in his hands and went on eating and came to his father and his mother. And he gave them and they did eat. But he told them not that he had taken the honey out of the carcass of the lion. And he went down there and he looked at this lion. And it was full of honey. And it was full of bees. And three times in these two verses we're given actually the word for carcass. But the first time is actually a little bit different. The first time it actually means the ruin of the lion. He came out to look at this ruined lion lying there dead in the field, a lion that was now full of honey and bees. And Israel had been promised a land that was flowing with milk and honey, so much honey that in the dead lion there's honey coming out. And that lion didn't look like a Philistine lion anymore. And it's interesting, when you look in the Bible, who is represented by a lion? And this lion is actually very specifically told us in verse 5 that it's a young lion. And did you know there were two tribes that are described as young lions or lion cubs? Any guess what that might be? Well, the obvious one I think is Judah. And that's in Genesis chapter 49 and verse 9. We're told that Judah is a lion's whelp. The second tribe is actually Dan. Dan is described in Deuteronomy 33 and verse 22. It says, and of Dan he said, Dan is a lion's whelp, he shall leap from Bashan. And so we have two tribes that describe to us as lion's whelp, as lion cubs, as young lions. And when Samson looks down at this dead lion, what he sees is these two tribes that are dead in the vineyard of God. You know, Dan was still living in a camp, an unable to capture their inheritance because they didn't have enough faith. And how about Judah? Judah is a strong tribe. Judah is a powerful tribe. What's Judah like at this time? Well, turn with me to the next chapter, Judges chapter 15, verses 9. This is Judah at the time. Then the Philistines went up and pitched in Judah and spread themselves in Lehi. And the men of Judah said, "Why are you come up against us?" And they answered, "To bind Samson are we come up, to do to him as he hath done to us." Then 3,000 men of Judah went to the top of the rock Etam. So we have 3,000 men, and they're coming here, of course, to defend Samson. But they're not. This is what they say. They say to Samson, "Knowest thou not that the Philistines are rulers over us? What is this that thou hast done unto us?" And he said unto them, "As they did to me, so have I done unto them." And they said unto him, "We are come down to bind thee, that we may deliver thee into the hand of the Philistines." We have two dead lions sitting in the vineyard of God. And there's a lesson here to Samson. Who is he? Is he the one who is fighting against the Philistine lion and destroying the Philistine lion through the power of God? Or is he like Dan and like Judah, lying dead in God's inheritance because of a lack of faith? And he continues on, and he goes down, and he marries this girl, and God intervenes in the situation, and he points out to Samson what Philistines are really like, and maybe he doesn't want to be associated with Philistines. And Samson turns, and he stings the Philistines, and he destroys the Philistines. And we're told about this in Judges chapter 15. Is this realization what Philistines are like? In Judges 15, he captures some foxes and he puts firebrands on their tails and he lets them loose in the Philistines' fields and he wipes out the Philistines' inheritance. It's interesting that we're told there in verse 5 of Judges chapter 15 that these foxes and the firebrands that he let go in the standing corn burn up the standing corn, the shocks and the corn and the vineyards and the olives, and he tortures it all. This is Israel's inheritance. This wasn't supposed to be the Philistines' inheritance, and he gets rid of the Philistines' economic engine. And that's what he was supposed to be doing. He was supposed to be fighting against the Philistine lion and not being the dead lion lying on the ground. And so we come to our second incident. After this, Samson, after fighting the Philistines, destroying the Philistines, he leaves and goes to this rock Etam. And Samson's smart. He realizes he's caused a kind of a kerfuffle among the Philistines. And they might not be too happy with him. And so he heads out someplace that's sort of rocky and with crevices and ravines so that, you know, if he has to fight a bunch of people, at least he can fight in a narrow place and not fight them all at once. And the Philistines come out in force. We see that in verse 9 of Judges chapter 15. The Philistines went up and pitched in Judah and spread themselves in Lehi. And we saw the response of Judah. Let's hand Samson over to the Philistines. 3,000 of them come to hand Samson over. You know, it's interesting. It's somewhat ironic. We're told in Judges 13 and verse 5 that about a promise that was made about Samson, that he would begin to deliver Israel out of the hand of the Philistines. And here we have Israel delivering Samson into the hand of the Philistines. And you have to ask, how would that feel? This is your ecclesia. This is your brethren. And you're trying to do the work of God here. You've finally been directed in the right direction, and they say, "You know what? You're causing too many problems for us. This is too much of a hassle. We don't really want to do this. We're kind of happy with the status quo, and you're messing that up for us. And so we're going to put an end to that. We're going to put a stop to that." And you know, in another place, in another time, this very same thing happened. The Jews who should have been on Jesus' side, because he was there to save them, turned him over to the Romans because they weren't happy with the changes he was suggesting for them to the status quo that they were happy to live with. And Samson was turned over to the Philistines by his brethren. But the Spirit of God came on him once again. And we read in verse 15 that he found a new jawbone of an ass and put forth his hand and took it and slew 1,000 men therewith. Now, you might have in your margin next to this jawbone a little note that says it's a moist jawbone. What it's saying, this is a fresh jawbone. It's still decaying. Probably not so pleasant to pick up, but he needed something to fight with. And so that's what was at hand, and that's what he used. It's a word that's actually only found one other time in the Bible. You might have a note of it. I have it in my margin. It's found in Isaiah chapter 1 and verse 6. And it's interesting to notice what this represents in Isaiah. So turn there if you would. Isaiah 1 and at verse 6. Where the one other place that this word for new or moist, or in this case in Isaiah 1, it's putrefying. Notice who it's talking about. We're going to start reading at verse 3. It says there, "The ox knoweth his owner, and the ass his master's crib, but Israel doth not know my people, doth not consider. Ah, sinful nation, a people laden with iniquity, a seed of evildoers, children that are corruptors. They have forsaken the Lord, they have provoked the Holy One of Israel unto anger. They are gone away backwards. Why should ye be stricken any more? Ye will revolt more and more. The whole head is sick, the whole heart faint. From the sole of the foot even to the head there is no soundness in it, but wounds and bruises and putrefying sores." And that's the word there, putrefying sores. "They have not been closed, neither bound up, neither mollified with ointment. Your country is desolate, your cities are burned with fire, your land strangers devour. It is in your presence, and it is desolate, as overthrown by strangers." And that, I think, also represents what Israel, what Dan, and what Judah were like in the days of Samson. They were this sort of putrefying sore, this putrefying jawbone that was decaying, that was lying there, that was dead. And Samson picked it up, and he used it to destroy the Philistines. But when he finishes, if you come back to Judges chapter 15, he throws it away. We have another example of, just as an aside, here's Samson, who... he likes to play on words, and we have another example of this in verse 16, where it says, "With the jawbone of an ass, heaps upon heaps, with the jaw of an ass have I slain 1,000 men." And I can't read Hebrew, but I'm told that this is all poetry here. The NIV, I think, sort of captures this. The NIV says, "With a donkey's jawbone I have made donkeys of them. With a donkey's jawbone I have killed 1,000 men." He's making a play on words with this word, jawbone of a donkey, and this heaps upon heaps. They're sort of rhyming couplets. And he takes this jawbone and he throws it away. He's done with it. Notice also Samson's perspective here. What does he say? He says, "I have slain 1,000 men." And immediately after this, God actually changes his perspective. He corrects his perspective. Because look in verse 18. Samson throws the jawbone away and says, "I've slain 1,000 men." And immediately he's dying of thirst. And his perspective changes. Look, he says in verse 18, "And he was sore athirst and called on the Lord and said, Thou hast given this great deliverance into the hand of thy servant." He switched it around. He suddenly realized, "Oh, wait a second, this isn't me. This was God working through me." And sometimes in the middle of our greatest victory, sometimes we have to step back and realize that, wait a second, this isn't my strength. This is God working through me. And then we have this peculiar little incident at the end of the chapter where it says in verse 19, "But God clave a hollow place that was in the jaw, and there came water thereout. And when he had drunk, his spirit came again, and he revived. Wherefore he called the name thereof Enhakor, which is in Lehi unto this day." Now, your margin may say that this word for the jaw here is the same word as Lehi. And this is a case where there's, some differences of opinion among the translators. How do you translate this? Do you translate it as a jaw? Or do you translate it and leave it as a proper name of Lehi? So the NIV translates it, "And God opened up a hollow place in Lehi," in the place. Whereas the King James says, "God opened up a hollow place that was in the jaw." And I think I like the King James translation a little bit better. There's always a question throughout the, when you're translating, of how you pick out these proper names or pick out the translation. And the reason is because I think there's a lesson here, what God was trying to teach to Samson. Because this jawbone represented Israel. And Samson had won a great victory with Israel, and he had just thrown Israel away and said, I've had enough of you. You're a putrefying nation. I don't want to work with you anymore. You betrayed me to the Philistines. I'm done. I've had it. And what I think God was saying is, wait a second. No. I have a job for you. You need to go back and you need to pick up that jawbone again. And if you don't, you're going to die of thirst. If he didn't pick up that jawbone, then he couldn't have access to the water that was there. And sometimes it's a lesson that we need to learn as well. Sometimes we're in ecclesias that have problems. Sometimes we're in ecclesias that we wonder, why are we here? And you sit there on a Sunday morning and you think, I really don't want to be here. I've had it with all of these other people. I've had it with these problems. I just want to go someplace else. And you know what? The lesson of Samson is stay there. Pick up the other people. Keep working in the situation. God hasn't called us to live by ourselves. We can't live the truth by ourselves. If we do, we will die of thirst. And that was the lesson I think he was giving to Samson in this incident. And I think Samson got the message. Because we're told in the next verse that he judged Israel in the days of the Philistines for 20 years. And we have a gap here. We're told nothing. I think Samson got the message. And he judged Israel. So, I want to come to the next incident, which is the story of Samson and Delilah, which is the downfall of Samson. And as we mentioned at the beginning, Samson had a weakness. He had a weakness with his eyes. He had a weakness for pretty girls. And twice in his life, he falls for them, and God works with the situation to show him that and to rescue him. But the third time, there was going to be no escape for Samson, and his eyes are poked out, and he's set to grind grain in the prison house. You know, in the New Testament, Jesus said in Matthew 5, if your eye offend thee, pluck it out. And I think Jesus was thinking of Samson in this incident. I think we know that because the context of this is about lusting after women. I think he's thinking about Samson and saying, this is what happened to Samson. If your eye offend you, pluck it out. And God often gives us opportunities to deal with our weaknesses and the challenges we have and gives us time to overcome them. But if we don't, sometimes God steps in and says, all right, you're not dealing with it. I will deal with it for you. And I will help you remove this problem in your life. And that, I think that's what God did for Samson. But how much easier is it if Samson had dealt with it first for himself? How much harder was it for him when God did it for him? But he didn't, and he found himself blind, grinding grain in the prison house of the Philistines. Instead of destroying the Philistines, he was helping to feed them. And I think he had a lot of time now to think about what might have been. And it's sad, because here's Samson, and now he's stuck. And God has left him, and his great strength is gone, and his opportunity seems to be over. And we read in Judges chapter 16 and verse 24 that the Philistines called for him. And it came to pass, when their hearts were merry, that they said, call for Samson that he may make us sport. And they called for Samson out of the prison house, and he made them sport, and they set him between the pillars. And they came to make a mockery of Samson and to laugh at him. But notice the verse before this. What were they trying to do? What was the point that the Philistines were trying to make? Look at verse 24. And when the people saw him, they praised their God, for they said, our God hath delivered into our hands our enemy and the destroyer of our country, which slew many of us. And they said, Samson, your God's left you. Our God is better than your God. Our God is more powerful than your God. And I think that stirred Samson up. And he looked at his life and said, what have I done? And look at his response here. It's really interesting, the change in Samson. Whereas before, he starts off, I've the one who's won this victory. I'm the one who has slain 1,000 men. Look in verse 28. And Samson called unto the Lord and said, O Lord God, remember me, I pray thee, and strengthen me, I pray thee, only this once, O God, that I may be at once avenged of the Philistines for my two eyes. And Samson starts to use the names and titles of God. He says, O Lord God, or Adonai Yahweh. And surrounded by the lords of the Philistines, he calls on the true Lord, Adonai Yahweh, to look down on this situation. And he says, I pray thee, strengthen me, I pray thee, only this once, O God. And it's a different word for God here. This is Elohim, this is mighty ones. And Samson is saying, God, show your mighty power once again. This isn't going to be Samson's strength, this is going to be God's strength. Because now it's very clear to Samson whose strength he had, and it wasn't his own. And he says there that I may be avenged of the Philistines for my two eyes. Now, it's interesting, if you look here, and I've just thrown up a whole bunch of different versions, there's some differences in how they translate this verse. And I've sort of highlighted the sort of the key sections. So the King James, that I may be at once avenged of the Philistines for my two eyes. And many are quite similar, but the one that sort of stands out as being different is the RSV. And it's interesting, it says that I may be avenged upon the Philistines for one of my two eyes. Odd, isn't it? That's quite different. Where are they getting this from? And so, I don't know if you're familiar with reverse interlinear. So for those of you who don't know Hebrew, and are probably never going to learn it, it's kind of helpful to have these reverse interlinears, because what they do is they put the Hebrew word underneath the English word, and they also give you the order of the word. So if you look over here, you'll see a little one. That means it's the first word, and then a three, that means it's the third word, and a two, that means it's the second, and four. So there's some changes in the order a little bit. So if you go down to this key section here, it says, Oh God, that I may be avenged on the Philistines for my two eyes. And I only have an ESV interlinear, so that's what this is. I think they have these for other versions. You'll notice that there's a whole bunch of sort of arrows here, that I may be avenged, and some blanks on the Philistines for my two eyes. So there's some words that are missing. Well, that's kind of odd. And notice also the order here. So it goes from 25 here to 26 to 27 to 28 to 33 to 34, back to 29 to 32 to 30. So there's some, there's a play on, there's a play on, they're moving the words around a little bit. It's not in the right order as the translators struggle to translate this little section here. So let's just focus on it. So avenged, and the two dots where they not translated the words, on the Philistines for my two eyes. And if you look at what are those two dots, what are those words? Well, one of them is the word vengeance. So it's avenged vengeance, and the second word is the word one. So avenged vengeance one on the Philistines for my two eyes is how they've sort of translated it. But if you notice that the order is wrong, 26, 27, 28, 33, 34, the order really should be like this. Avenged vengeance one for two eyes my on the Philistines, if you were just going to translate it directly. And so all the translators had difficulty. What did he mean here by avenged vengeance one? One what? So many say, vengeance at once. And the RSV said, oh, I don't know about that. I think he's saying one of my two eyes, rather than vengeance at once. And it's interesting to look at that the words he used. Now, the word one there just means one. But that word vengeance, that second vengeance, is special. It's not found that many times in the Bible. And it's found twice before this incident. And I think it tells us what Samson was thinking about. It's found once in Leviticus 26 and once in Deuteronomy, three times in Deuteronomy 32. You might want to turn there with me. I have it on the screen, but it's kind of small. So Leviticus 26, and we see that word in verse 25. And this is God talking to Israel about his judgments upon them if they don't obey him. And he says there in verse 25, And I will bring a sword upon you that shall avenge the quarrel of my covenant. And when ye are gathered together within your cities, I will send the pestilence among you, and ye shall be delivered into the hands of your enemies. The vengeance of the covenant. That's the same word. And it's interesting. I think that's what Samson was thinking about. I'm thinking, wow, that's exactly what God did to me in my life. He has brought about his vengeance upon me because I have forsaken his covenant. But the chapter finishes actually quite in a positive manner. Look at the end of this chapter. Verse 40. If they shall confess their iniquity and the iniquity of their fathers with their trespass, which they have trespassed against me, and that also they have walked contrary unto me, and that I also have walked contrary unto them, and have brought them into the land of their enemies. If then their uncircumcised hearts be humbled, and they then accept of the punishment of their iniquity, then will I remember my covenant with Jacob, and also my covenant with Isaac, and also my covenant with Abraham will I remember, and I will remember the land. And I think Samson was thinking about this. And then you move on to the second place it's found before this incident. And that's in Deuteronomy 32, and it's found three times there. Deuteronomy 32, and verse 25. And now it's talking about, once again, it's talking about, if you look at this section, it's talking about people who've corrupted themselves. But it's also finishing with some positive themes to it. So Deuteronomy 32, and at verse 35, God says, to me belongeth vengeance and recompense. Their foot shall slide in due time, for the day of their calamity is at hand, and the things that shall come upon them make haste. And he's talking about the enemies of God. And God is saying, I'm the one who's going to provide vengeance. And then we see the word again in verse 41. If I wet my glittering sword, and my hand will take hold on judgment, and I will render vengeance to mine enemies and reward them that hate me. And then we see the word again in verse 43. Rejoice, all ye nations, with his people, for he will avenge the blood of his servants, and will render vengeance to his adversaries, and will be merciful unto his land and to his people. I think that's what Samson was thinking about. I think that's where Samson's mind went to. He went to this. That's why he used this word vengeance here. He said, God, this is what I want you to do, to step into this situation and exert your vengeance upon the Philistines. And so that's why I think, actually, the RSV, I like the RSV translation. Because what did Samson want to be avenged for? I think he wasn't asking to be avenged for both of his eyes. I think he realized that he was in this situation because of his sins. I think he was asking to be avenged for just one of these eyes. And I think this is why Jesus, when he picks this up, he uses the singular. Jesus says, if your eye offend you, pluck it out. One eye, singular eye. Because you see, the Philistines had plucked out Samson's eye of flesh. And that needed to go. But they also had taken his eye of faith. The Philistines had tried to destroy him, to try to destroy his faith, to try to destroy his hope in his God. And Samson says, no. Avenge me for that. Step into this situation. Show your vengeance upon these people who tried to destroy my people, who tried to destroy me and my hope and my faith. Work with me once again, please. Help me. And we're told here, at the end, that Samson says in verse 30, and Samson said, let me die with the Philistines. And I think Samson recognized, and look, he said, I'm a Philistine. I'm a sinner. I deserve to die. But please work with me in this situation once more. Help me to defeat your enemies. He wasn't asking to be saved. He realized that he was made of flesh. He was asking for God's glory to be upheld, and for the Philistines to know that there was a God in Israel. And Samson died there among the Philistines. But he wasn't left there. We're told at the end that his brothers and his father's house, they went down there and they picked up his body and they brought it back to where it all started, between Zorah and Eshtaol. And one day Samson will rise from the dead, and he will find out that he's been accepted into God's kingdom, despite all of his sins, and he was listed among the faithful. And I think the lesson from the life of Samson has to be that no matter what you have done, no matter how far you have fallen, no matter what opportunities you have squandered, if you repent and if you turn, God will forgive you. And this can be hard to believe, and this can take incredible faith. And we've been studying the life of Peter this week, and you have this contrast between Peter and Judas, who both denied Christ. One betrayed him, one denied him, but Peter trusted that there would be forgiveness, and Judas couldn't accept that there might be forgiveness. And so, what is the summary of Samson's life? Why would the writer of Hebrews 11 pick Samson to be in this chapter of the faithful? And I think he picked him because he was trying to show a point, to show that heroes of faith, being a hero of faith, doesn't mean that you'll never fail. Being a hero of faith means that you trust in God's forgiveness.